Monday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's My Ag Life and Almonds episode, Almond Board's Sebastian Saw lays out the importance of maintaining spur health for next year's crop. Taylor Charleston will have that report. And then a little bit later on, Kylie Harlan will be in as she investigates the relationship between Liguus bug infestations and fruit size in strawberries. And I'll have a check-in of regional and national agricultural news headlines, beginning with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Take advantage of early bird pricing for only $175. Price goes up after July 31st. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture Office of Farm to Fork has announced $900,000 in grants that are being awarded for technical assistance providers to expand access to the Healthy Refrigeration Grant Program and provide technical support to applicants. Grant recipients include the California Green Business Network, Community Environmental Council, Contra Costa Health Services, County of San Diego Agriculture, Weights and Measures, Effectora, High Sierra Energy Foundation, and Porchlight Community Services. You can visit the HRGP webpage for more details about each awardee, including the areas they serve. The program is focused on improving access to fresh and nutritious California-grown food for all Californians, according to CDFA Secretary Karen Ross. She says they want to thank Governor Newsom and the California legislature for making funds available to support their local farmers and the health and resiliency of local communities. HRGP funds energy-efficient refrigeration equipment in corner stores, small businesses, and food donation programs in low-income and low-food access communities. HRGP grants enable recipients to stock California-grown produce, nuts, dairy, meat, and eggs, in addition to minimally processed and culturally appropriate foods. Through these TAP grants, CDFA is working to reduce barriers to participation in HRGP and mitigate some of the challenges faced by applicants during the pilot phase of the program via two categories. Number one is outreach and application assistance, promote the program to eligible applicants and assist with equipment and applications, especially in multiple languages. And two is technical expertise to help applicants identify the best refrigeration choices, meet energy efficiency and global warming potential standards, and offer healthy retail support to help corner stores market fresh produce. The $900,000 for technical assistance is a portion of the total $20 million in HRGP funding from combined fiscal year 2021 to 2022 and 2022 to 2023 state budget allocations. The next round is CDFA accepting applications from entities in low-income or low-food access areas seeking refrigeration equipment through HRGP is planned for December of 2022. El Dorado County was notified it is one of 15 California counties to receive a disaster declaration by the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the freeze occurring April 11th through the 13th of 2022, making farm operators eligible for consideration for assistance from the Farm Service Agency. This assistance includes FSA emergency loans. Farmers in eligible counties have 8 months from the date of a secretarial disaster declaration to apply for emergency loans. FSA considers each emergency loan application on its own merits, taking into account the extent of production losses on the farm and the security and repayment ability of the operator. In an organic produce network, organic market update, organic blueberries are promotable out of the Pacific Northwest with growers ramping up their harvests, bringing on steady supplies and good quality out of Oregon and Washington. Reasonable prices are forecast for late July and early August, including on 18-ounce family packs. New crop Peruvian organic blueberries are being shipped with some availability in mid-August. Mexico does have very light crossings available in mostly 6-ounce size containers right now. Organic strawberry prices continue to be promotable out of California as harvest remains strong and quality has been good. Organic blackberries are still fairly tight as New Jersey continues to harvest fruit through July. California supplies remain tighter, but harvests are expected to pick up to more promotable levels in early August. Organic raspberry prices have increased as the rise of the conventional market is putting a strain on organic supplies. Overall, harvest and supplies are steady and quality is good. High-quality vine-ripe organic cantaloupes and honeydew are promotable out of the West Side growing region of California. Organic Galia melons is also in season. Organic seedless watermelon supplies are tied out of California, with acreage down and supplies being sporadic. Pennsylvania organic watermelons are expected to start with light availability in early August. Organic mini seedless watermelon supplies are improving. Sizing is larger, leading to more availability in 6-count versus the more popular 8-count sizes. Quality has been excellent from California and Arizona, with supplies expected to remain steady. Organic broccoli and cauliflower from California are yielding strong supply volumes following weeks of lighter production. Quality on both commodities is strong, and with increased volume, pricing has begun to fall. Supply volume from Quebec is also increasing and will help to drive the price of the overall market down. Organic celery from California has promotable prices and outstanding quality, as well as plentiful supplies. Conditions are expected to remain promotable heading into August and into September. And organic dark sweet cherries have become more affordable and available. Growers have not planned much promotional activity due to the small crop volume, but do have a modest flush of fruit available to promote. Organic peaches and nectarines continue in peak season with excellent quality from California. California organic plums and pluots are also in season with excellent demand and quality. WineJobs.com's winery job index for June increased 29% versus a year earlier to 890, signaling the end of strong spring demand even as hiring demand remained at elevated levels. This was the strongest June reading on record, indicating that wineries continue to seek a broad range of staff. Among the major job category sub-indices was winemaking and production. Those roles continue to be in demand, with the sub-index up 25% versus a year ago to 1,346, making it the largest component of the index. Sales and marketing roles, which account for the smallest component of the overall index, saw the strongest growth in demand, rising 85% to 388. The subcategory's strong showing was consistent with above average demand for finance roles and general administrative staff. Direct to consumer roles, including tasting room and retail staff, saw demand decline 10% to an index reading of 1,080, yet year-to-date, the index is up 14% versus last year. The WineJobs.com Winery Job Index data is one of the wine industry's metrics released each month in the Wine Analytics Report.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Taylor Chalstrom is in now talking about the importance of maintaining spur health in next year's almond crop.
Maintaining a healthy spur population in an almond orchard will require careful irrigation timing and good tree health from hole split through September. While it may be a challenge for some growers to apply water in their orchards post-harvest, that is one of the keys to a healthy spur population in the orchard. Water stress post-harvest affects spurs, the tree's fruit-producing structures, reducing bloom numbers and fruit set the following year. It also results in reduced carbohydrate development, meaning the tree will have less energy for flower development. Sebastian Saw, Almond Board of California's Associate Director of Agricultural Research, said keeping spurs healthy promotes a good balance between fruiting and non-fruiting spurs, ensuring good yields the following year. Trees can have recently formed spurs, spurs producing fruit, and resting spurs after the previous year's fruit production.
About 80% or 85% of the almonds that you see in a mature tree actually come in from the spurs. At the end of the day, that fruit was a flower before. Before that, it was a flower, it was a very bad. And everything happened in that structure called spurs. So spurs are these compacted shoots, no longer than 2 inches, that are on top of the branches. They take about 2 years to form. When they form, they produce flowers, and ultimately those flowers set fruit. And if we're lucky, that fruit stays in the tree all year round until then it all splits and we can harvest it. So why is it important to keep a spurs health? Because we have seen that these spurs, that there are different spur populations in a tree. You have spurs that are yielding fruit that are the responsible for your current year fruit. So those are what we call the fruiting spurs. But also if you walk the orchard and you look into the trees as well, you will see that there are spurs that are resting, spurs that do not have fruit. So those are the ones that we call non-fruiting spurs. And spurs actually are very alternate bearing at the spur level. You will have, so if the spurs yields fruit on year one, it's very likely that the next year is going to be resting and it's going to become that population of non-fruiting spurs. So you really need to keep a balance of spurs, and I always say the homework of the good horticulturist is to keep a balance of spur populations, meaning spurs that are having a lot of fruit during the current season, so you have a good crop during the current season, but you also need to have spurs that are healthy and resting, and that will ultimately be responsible of the following crop, following season. So you want those spur populations to alternate, keep them alive, and be productive, and so achieve sustainability over the years. If you don't keep those populations in balance, you may see the alternate bearing situation at the whole tree level or at the whole plot level. And so you will see those fluctuations in yield that you don't want to have. You want to have the maximum yield, the potential yield.
Reduced spur health is almost always caused by external stresses to the tree. From hole split through September, avoiding extreme water stress becomes even more important in almond production. Loss of leaves reduces the tree's ability to capture light, thus reducing photosynthetic capability. Trees with yellow leaves in early September due to extreme water stress or trees that have had premature defoliation due to excessive shaking won't capture sufficient carbohydrates to have a strong fruit set next season. High mite populations can also cause early defoliation and interfere with photosynthesis, resulting in lower carbohydrate stores, ultimately affecting spur health.
We need to pay attention to those drivers all year round. You know, irrigation management, for instance, is key. Like early in the season, irrigation management will, if you mess it up with your irrigation management early in the season, the tree will grow less. So you will have smaller shoots, and therefore ultimately you will have a smaller spur population in the future. So remember, those spurs are formed on top of those shoots. So smaller trees, fewer spurs. So that's an example of how irrigation early in the season could affect that spur number of spurs. But spur quality, the flowers that those spurs produce is also affected by water and irrigation management. About this time of the year, at the same time that the holes are opening, the flowers near the vegetative buds that are in those spurs that are going to be responsible for the following year production, they are going through a physiological process called flower differentiation. This bud differentiation, the conversion from the vegetative bud to the flowers bud. So that process starts at hole splits and continues during harvest and a little bit of post-harvest as well. And we have seen that that process is affected by the health of the tree, meaning more stress trees that may have some nutrient deficiencies or that may have some poor irrigation management, especially after harvest. They may not flower. They may not develop as many flowers. And if they do develop as many flowers, those flowers may be less healthy than otherwise on trees that are not stressed. And an unhealthy flower, meaning a flower that does not have all that storage and reserves, is going to have a very hard time at the following year to set fruit. So, you know, as we move into harvest, I always say, keep your trees healthy. Make sure that you can put that water back after you harvest right away, because remember, there's a very key process that's going on, which is the flower differentiation. Those at the spore level, those vegetative buds are converting into flower buds, and you want to do that very, let the tree do that process very well, and also you want to support that process with by facilitating the accumulation of reserves for the following year. So good irrigation and also good tree health in general. You know, I've seen sometimes some orchards where after harvest, the trees were such stress, or maybe there was too much force used during the shaking that the leaves fall. So the trees really look yellow, the leaves look yellow, or they may have lost their leaves. So if you have a premature leaf fall, that's also a stressor, an extra stressor to that ultimately will be detrimental for a strong bloom and a strong fruit set at the following year. So you got to be careful with those type of actions too.
Ultimately, anything that will affect the flower populations on an almond tree will also affect the spur populations. Taking care of flowers will mean taking care of the spurs, improving fruit set for the next season. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news, farmers will see an injection of $20 billion in funds for climate smart agriculture practices to help lower emissions from agriculture under the climate deal reached by Senate Democrats last week. Farmers and rural landowners will also see a greater push over the next 8 years from developers of solar and wind projects and likely carbon pipelines, as well as those projects seeking to capture billions in tax incentives. Along with that, biofuel companies will also see more incentives through tax credits and grants to build out more renewable fuel infrastructure, especially to develop sustainable aviation fuels. The deal is dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 and focuses on climate change and energy. Bunge profits rose 15% during the second quarter of 2022. However, the global farm commodities company did not reach Wall Street expectations, and the share price dropped 5% as a result. The company raised its full-year profit forecast and talked about plans to spend $3.3 billion on future investments and expenditures during the next few years. Bunge attributed a $59 million net loss for the quarter in its agribusiness segment because of the war in Ukraine. CEO Gregory Heckman says it will be a slow process for shippers to move commodities out of Ukraine and into global markets. The company's results come amid backed up supply chains and strong demand for food and fuel, driving inflation to its highest level in decades. Bunge's rising operating costs offset higher demand and tighter supplies of commodity grain crops. Transportation and ongoing COVID-19 issues continue to drag down the world's grain sector. President Joe Biden's nominee to be the next U.S. chief ag negotiator won high marks from both parties at his Senate confirmation hearing, but is hemmed in by the White House's no free trade deal policy. Doug McCallop will likely be confirmed by the Senate, and he vows to use his nearly 30 years of experience at USDA and the White House to fight for a level playing field for U.S. producers overseas. But Senate finance members like Oklahoma's James Lankford point to a problem that McCallop has no control over.
We've had the USTR here in this room multiple times. We've had Secretary Raimondo to be able to talk about trade negotiations and what's happening on the commerce side. And the very clear message that we've heard over and over again is we're not going to do trade deals. The president has instructed us we're not going to do trade deals.
Deals, Lankford argues, that will outlive administrations, unlike the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, which is executive actions and lack future certainty. But McCallop, clearly hemmed in by the president's policy, pushed back.
The farmers I talked to in a 30-year career with USDA, I think the reason that they associate those three letters, FTA or Free Trade Agreement, with market access is they look back at past performance and what that has done for them.
McCallop insists he can still make a difference for producers.
I wouldn't be taking this job, I wouldn't be interested in it, if I didn't think I could make a difference for farmers. So what they need, your ranchers in terms of meat products, your farmers in terms of row crops, it's going to be incumbent upon me to deliver the kinds of results and to be an advocate within the system and abroad to make sure that at the end of the day, things that weren't sent to these countries previously, now we have an opportunity there.
With an early focus on the UK, Southeast Asia, Latin America, and parts of Africa. Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin and Chuck Grassley of Iowa have introduced a Farmland Security Act to increase scrutiny over foreign investments into America's agricultural land. The legislation would make sure that Congress can address the impacts of foreign investments on family farms, rural communities, and a domestic food supply. This bipartisan legislation will provide the tools they need to protect the longevity of American family farm operations for generations to come, according to Baldwin. Current reports show that foreign-owned agricultural acreage has nearly doubled in the past 10 years. One of the provisions in the act would require the Ag Secretary to report to Congress on foreign investments in agricultural land, including the impact that foreign ownership has on family farms, rural communities, and the domestic food supply. Foreign buyers, especially those backed by governments like China, purchasing farmland in the U.S. raises serious national security concerns that people need to know about, according to Grassley. A federal advisory committee on urban agriculture will meet on August 5th. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has more on the upcoming meeting.
Coming up next Friday, the latest meeting of USDA's Federal Advisory Committee for Urban Agriculture and Innovative Production.
Working with this committee enables the USDA to continue working to support urban agriculture as it plays an important role in producing nutritious food, but also providing jobs and offering access to fresh, healthy foods in areas where grocery stores are scarce, for example.
Brian Gussie is the director of the Agriculture Department's Office of Urban Ag and Innovative Production. Topics of discussion during the August 5th meeting include new urban conservation practices, commission focus areas and priorities, and new Farm Service Agency urban county committees. Information about the advisory committee and how to register for the Zoom virtual meeting can be found at www.usda.gov/partnerships. Go to the I'm Looking For section to select advisory committees. That page will contain a link to USDA advisory committees. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com. Learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Up next, Kylie Harlan is in with a report talking about Liguus bug infestations and fruit size in strawberries.
Liguus infestations are a serious issue for California strawberry producers. Liguus can affect the fruit's appearance, taste, and overall quality. Mark Bolda, the University of California's County Director for Strawberries and Caneberries in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties, tells us more about how Liguus affects strawberries.
So the deal with Liguus bugs, which are native to California, by the way, is that when they get into in strawberries, the nymphal feeding on the flowers and the young developing fruit, it causes the fruit to misshape. And so, you know, you get what's called cat facing or monkey facing, and it's just that, you know, and they're not good fruit. They're not juicy, they're very seedy, and they look terrible. So that's the problem with Liguus bug. And you know, lately, like over the last 10 or 15 years, there's just so many of them. They're very difficult to control.
Bolda shares more on some of the current control methods for this pest and their efficacy.
Well, so there's really two main ones that people are using. I mean, you do have, you know, there's been some work done with strip crops and, you know, natural enemies and so forth. But the two main ones that are going on right now is one is the bug vac, where, you know, it's a tractor-mounted vacuum, and they suck them out of the canopy, and then, you know, they slam it up against the baffle, or in some cases, gather them in bags. You know, that's one. And then the other, which, you know, I'm more concentrated on, is the use of pesticides. And, you know, as pesticides evolve, we're, you know, getting away from some of these older materials that are, you know, have these lengthy persistence in the environment and so forth. So I think the issue with the bug bags, and many growers use them, is that it has no persistence whatsoever. You know, you suck out, and then, you know, you're using, because you're depending on air resistance, you're removing the adults and not the nymphs, and certainly not the eggs, because the eggs are embedded in the plant tissue. So it's kind of, you see a lot of dead bugs and stuff, but, you know, those populations are quickly being replaced because, you know, the vacuum's gone, and so you have to wait until the next time that it passes over. Whereas a pesticide, you know, you do have some residual effect in the field, so the Lygus bugs that are hatching are also coming in contact with the pesticide.
Bolda is currently working with an experimental chemistry to help combat Lygus. While the chemistry is novel, he is optimistic about its future.
So I am working with an experimental chemistry. It's very novel. The new class of chemistries is certainly not like what we used to have, like the organophosphates and things like that. So it's what makes it very exciting is that actually the Lygus, I spray them and they're gone for a very long time. And so that affords us the opportunity to grow strawberries side by side, some with Lygus and then others without. And so you can see how the plant is responding. You can also see how the fruit is responding. And one of the things that has become very evident is plants and fruit that are allowed to grow in the absence of Lygus, the fruit is larger. And it must be because, you know, the little seeds are actually achenes. They're not really, you know, horticulturally seeds, but we'll just go and call them seeds because that's what everybody sees them as. Is that there's, if you don't have Lygus feeding on the developing flower and the young fruit, is that more seeds are allowed to form. And sometimes you just don't even get deformity of the fruit, you just have less seeds, and therefore the fruit is smaller when you have Lygus around.
The current control methods for Lygus have been used for quite some time, which has led to a bit of a resistance buildup, impacting the efficacy of these methods. Bolda encourages the industry to embrace new chemistries and other control methods in the future.
Fruit is, well, in this case, because most pesticides for Lygus, they've been used for such a long time that the populations are totally resistant to these chemistries. Well, I shouldn't say totally, they're quite resistant to these chemistries, and so you never really get good suppression. Well, now we finally have a material that really suppresses them, and so we do see that the fruit is significantly larger. I mean, it really is. So that's the difference there, and actually having something that works compared to chemistries that kind of do something, you know. So that's what we're seeing. You know, we as an industry, we can't just be, you know, I know there's been a big push on the part of the Strawberry Commission to up the power of the vacuums. This is it, you know, we could just basically suck our way right out of the Lygus problem. I don't think it's that simple. I think we do need to look at all aspects, and that does include the use and testing of novel pesticides and see how they work, because we actually have now found one that's going to really help us out a lot.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.